From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of August 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services will join us to take up the agricultural energy markets. In the second half hour of our program, we call that The Farming World, and it's available on many of these stations and always online at WILLAG.org. We'll take up the wheat crop in Russia, Ukraine, and the Black Sea. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget, we'll check the agricultural weather forecast, too. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago, on a Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this, lower in the wheat pit at 712.5 for the nearby September contract. At 7.5 cents lower. December futures 727.5, down 8.25, and the March wheat at 740.25. These are actually Kansas City Board of Trade numbers, down 8.5. September wheat in Chicago at 694.75 for the soft red, down 17.75. December at 726.75, down 17, and the March at 744.75, down 13. September corn futures 9.5 cents lower, 393.5. The settlement price December at $4.09, down 9 cents. And the March at $4.23 a bushel in the corn pit, down 8.75. May corn 431.5, 8.5 lower. July at 438.75, down 8.75. Soybeans, August contract 1036.25, 12.25 lower. September 1021.25, down 13.25. November beans $10.22, 13 cents lower. January at 1028.25, 12.5 cents lower. The March at 1031, down 12 cents. Bean meal, August contract, 309.30, down $1.80. August bean oil at 41.46, 26 cents lower. August live cattle futures, $93.40, 30 cents higher. October at 95.32.5, down 15. And the August feeders, 112.12.5, 15 cents lower as well. September there at 112.05, up a nickel on the afternoon. And the August lean hog futures in Chicago from the CME Group at $81.71, or rather 70 cents, 100, finished 50 cents higher on the afternoon. It is a Monday. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Outside markets, starting with the crude oil. September contract, $80.22 a barrel, down $1.26. Ethanol at $1.70.04, down 2.2. Natural gas at $4.30.07, 0.2 of a cent lower. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.12.08 of a cent, down 2.4 of a cent. Gold contracts, $1,196.20 an ounce in the nearby August, down $4.50 in the Dow now, just about 34 points lower at $10,665. The U.S. dollar at 80.8 is up 0.09, and the CRB index at 272.28 is down 0.23 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the nearby regions looks like this afternoon. It says a 40% chance of showers around Urbana-Champaign, a few thunderstorms this afternoon as well. Some of those storms could produce heavy rain, mostly cloudy, though. High near 93. The heat index very high this afternoon at 103 degrees. Tonight, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy. A low this evening, around 73 degrees, calm winds. They'll become out of the south to southeast, around 5 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, on Wednesday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy. A high near 93, heat index values 103, southeast winds at 5 miles an hour. And then Wednesday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a low around 74, southwest winds between 3 and 5 miles an hour. And on Thursday, it'll be partly cloudy, high near 93, west-southwest winds between 5 and 7 miles an hour. Friday night, mostly cloudy, high of, Friday day, mostly sunny, a high near 92. And Friday night, partly cloudy, with a low around 71. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana is with us. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Been quiet in your office today?
Been quiet. I think the state fair over here has got a lot of our customers busy. A lot of their kids have got animals and other projects over at the show. And we've been getting most of the phone calls were telling us how their children have done.
So
enjoyed hearing about that, and we love to hear and see those kids are working hard with their livestock projects.
Yeah, it's always fun to have them do livestock projects. Apparently, I can't tell the difference between a Monday and a Tuesday. I was here sort of yesterday, but took off. I ran by Crawfordsville twice in the last 24 hours. I went to the Cardinal-Cincinnati game last night. And so I was home late, and I guess it shows a little bit. I can't get Monday and Tuesday straightened out. We did watch the numbers yesterday, and then we watched them again today. It's been, well, a sort of a downtrend now. Wheat futures have turned lower. They keep raising the margins in Chicago, and everything else is running down with them, despite the fact that it's pretty hot and really hasn't rained.
You know, the forecasts are the futures market, of course, and we've seen chances of some rain here later in the week. We've got a 40% chance about every day this week up through the main Midwest area, and I think that that's one of the things they're looking at, that we're not short of moisture. We are hot, and we're probably past some critical stages. The area that is under quite a bit of scrutiny as far as the yields continuing on is from southern Illinois on farther south, Kentucky, Missouri, down into the Delta that way. They're flowering in the beans here right now, and it's over 100 degrees before the heat index in a lot of those areas. And there's a little bit of concern about taking the top off the yield in the bean market down there and also some of the corn. But all in all, through our area here, I think, you know, we're looking awfully good. Even the extreme heat, I think we've got enough moisture to handle it as far as Montgomery County, Indiana. But, you know, there is some speculation there that we might be taking the top off everything. I think Darrell Good and his group that puts together their ratings were among that group that felt that way. Theirs was in the 158 to 160 bracket, I believe, as far as what they thought the corn yield would be.
Yeah, they do some modeling. I talked to Darrell yesterday, and you'll hear him in the second half of our program this afternoon. Actually, about, I don't know, we'll be about 10 till the hour. You'll hear him. And talk to him about the wheat market in particular, and then we talked a little bit about crops here in the United States. You know, frankly, I don't remember whether I had that conversation with him on or off the mic, but you're right. It was in the 150-168 area. Those are the models that he and Scott Irwin put together, and they run them just like most other people run models. So we'll see how those models turn out, and we'll talk more to Darrell after we get those USDA reports later this week. What do you see there?
Well, you know, it's going to be a big question mark on how much the government will stick in that will pick up in corn exports because of the lack of feed wheat being shipped out of Russia because of their embargoes and stopping of exports that way. You know, we're looking here basically at a 13-3 basically on the corn as far as a guesstimate of what we're going to be in the beans around a 3-3-6. You know, for production that way. And we're looking at an average yield of the guesstimates. Everybody's about the 164 plus, one, you know, 0.1 or 2 there, and the beans around to 43.2 as far as if we take the average of all the guesstimates coming in, Todd. So those are still big numbers. They're still feeling that we're going to have a good harvest season here and we'll produce, you know, some top-notch yields. And it's sort of discounting this last little hot weather out there. So, you know, with those yields, why we'd have to say that maybe we're on the high side of things as far as the market goes. But yet we had an all-time record volume in wheat here just on Friday, and yet we only changed the open interest 368 contracts. So we have a lot of people that are still long this, very long this market, and a lot of money betting on the long side of these markets going into the report.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
No, I just stay in and don't overheat yourself today because the weather is extremely warm out there. But we're looking forward to the report on Thursday, and then it's going to be time to make some decisions whether we want to continue to do any further marketing.
We'll talk with you later. Thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the latest crop progress figures. They show that by the week's end, 97% of the nation's corn crop was at or beyond the silk stage, 10 percentage points ahead of last year, 3 points ahead of the five-year average. 21% of this year's crop reached the dough stage during the week, pushing overall progress to 52% complete, or 29 percentage points ahead of last year and 12 points ahead of the five-year average. By the eighth day of August, 14% of the corn crop was at or beyond the dense stage, 9 points ahead of last year, 3 points ahead of the five-year average. 71% of the corn crop reported in good to excellent condition. Nationwide, soybeans, 93% of the crop was at or beyond the bloom stage. That's 8 points ahead of last year and 3 points ahead of the five-year average. Blooming was completed or nearly completed throughout much of the Corn Belt and the Delta. Pod setting was evident in 71% of this year's crop by the week's end, 19 points ahead of last year and 4 points ahead of the five-year average. Overall, 66% of the soybean crop reported in good to excellent condition. That's unchanged from both ratings last week and this same time last year. Now here are the state statisticians.
This is Greg Tayson, director of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending August 8, 2010. The first week of August picked up where June and July left off. Reports indicate most of Iowa received at least 1 inch of rain last week, with instances of over 8 inches of precipitation in central Iowa. This follows the wettest June on record and the fifth wettest July on record. Along with frequent showers, last week's weather included high temperatures and humidity, which has promoted crop growth and development. The corn and soybean crops look extremely good in fields that have been able to absorb the consistent rainfall. As producers continue aerial fungicide spraying on corn, some yellow corn resulting from nitrogen deficiency continues to be noticeable. Nearly all of the corn acres have silked, 81% have reached milk stage, and 38% have entered dough stage. All three well ahead of last year and 2 to 5 days ahead of the five-year average. Corn condition remained virtually unchanged for the third straight week at 70% good to excellent. 97% of the soybean crop has bloomed, while pods have begun setting on 82% of the soybean acres, 3 days ahead of last year and 2 days ahead of normal. Soybean condition ratings increased 2 percentage points to 73% good to excellent, although some cases of sudden death syndrome, white mold, and aphids presence have been reported. Temperatures for the week averaged 2.8 degrees above normal, while the statewide average rainfall was 2.15 inches, more than double the weekly normal of 0.96 inches. This was the 10th consecutive week of above normal precipitation and the 11th of the past 12 weeks with above normal temperatures. This is Greg Tayson reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending August 8th. Hot and dry conditions continued over much of the state last week. These conditions are taking a toll on the corn and soybeans, with producers reporting signs of crop stress in many fields. Precipitation was reported below normal throughout the state, with the exception being the two northern crop reporting districts, where they reported above normal rainfall for the week ending August 8th. Temperatures averaged nearly 4 degrees above normal, and topsoil moisture supplies now stand at 7% very short, 19% short, 65% adequate, and only 9% surplus. Growing degree day units since May 1 ended the week at 2,232, which was 213 units, or 11% ahead of the historic average. Statewide, corn in the dough stage advanced to 78% compared to only 27% last year and 57% for the five-year average. 29% of the corn crop was reported in the dense stage compared with 2% last year and 15% for the five-year average. Overall, the corn crop was rated in 64% good or excellent condition, down 2 percentage points from last week. The crop reporting district leading the state in corn maturity was the southeastern district, where 49% was reported in the dense stage. Soybean blooming progress ended the week at 94%, and this compares to 78% last year and 90% for the five-year average. 71% of soybeans are setting pods compared to only 35% a year ago and 66% for the five-year average. Overall, the soybean crop was rated in 63% good or excellent condition, down 1 percentage point from last week. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service with a crop weather report for the week ending August 8, 2010. The last fields of wheat were being harvested in northern Panhandle counties as high heat and humidity covered the state. The warm weather provided row crops with plenty of heat units to advance maturity. Soybeans were active setting pods, and most of the corn was now in the dough stage. Irrigated corn conditions rated 82% good or excellent, while dryland corn rated 83% above year-ago levels. Corn soaked was at 98% ahead of last year but equal to average. Corn in the dough stage was 54% ahead of 32% last year and 48% average. Corn in the dense stage was 7%. Soybeans blooming were 97% complete, and soybean setting pods were at 64%. Sorghum headed was at 78% with the first fields turning color. Dry beans blooming was at 98%, while dry bean setting pods was at 71%. Oat harvest is near completion at 97%. The second cutting of alfalfa was wrapping up, while the third cutting of alfalfa was at 47%. This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Dan Loftus, Deputy Director for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for week ending August 8, 2010. Corn was 71% in the milk stage compared to 21% last year and 54% average. Dough stage for corn advanced to 21% compared to 1% last year and 15% average. Only 1% of corn was in the dense stage compared to none last year and 2% average. Corn was rated 51% good and 40% excellent condition. Soybeans were 97% blooming compared to 87% last year and 95% average. 78% were setting pods compared to 48% during the previous year and 70% for the average. Soybean condition was rated 56% good and 30% excellent. Some producers reported spraying soybeans for aphids in some areas. Other crops being harvested included potatoes, sweet corn, and canola at 12%, 21%, and 7% harvested respectively. Potatoes were rated 58% good and 38% excellent, while canola was rated 27% fair and 38% good. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the Crop Weather Report for the week ending August 8th. Continued hot, humid weather persisted for another week with some reports of daytime temperatures of over 100 degrees. The high temperatures have begun to deplete the topsoil moisture, especially in some central and southern areas of the state. The recent high temperatures and the lower soil moisture has stressed some fields. The extreme high temperatures pushed crop development quickly to maturity, with some early planted fields starting to dry down sooner than expected. A few reports of soybean disease problems, such as SDS, were received. 66% of the planted corn acreage is in the dough stage, compared with 20% for last year and 40% for the five-year average. 19% of the planted corn acreage has dented, compared with 0% for last year and 6% for the five-year average. Corn condition for the week was rated as 65% good to excellent, compared with 64% for last year at this time. 94% of the planted soybean acreage is blooming, compared with 76% last year at this time and 87% for the five-year average. 74% of the soybean acreage is setting pods, compared to 34% for last year and 53% for the five-year average. Soybean condition is rated at 65% in the good to excellent category, compared with 63% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
And I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension. You're listening to Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services is on the phone line with us from his Chicago, Illinois office. That's a member of ADM as an affiliate. He's here to talk about the agricultural energy markets. Hi, Stephen. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Todd. Doing well.
Well, the higher price of corn as an input for ethanol should have had some impact on the marketplace. What did you see as we went through those higher prices?
Well, we actually are seeing some of the margins improve somewhat from where they were a few weeks ago, as ethanol prices did improve as well. So, and natural gas also has shown some weakness, which is a key input into ethanol. So the situation certainly for ethanol, I think, is at least a bound situation more than one that was starting to be of concern.
Yeah, so while the price of corn was going up, the price of crude oil was dragging up the price of gasoline, I suppose, and natural gas as an input was going down.
Correct, correct. And we'll probably continue to see those trends intact, particularly if the corn market continues to maintain, some of the valuations we saw here today. And the energy markets and crude market particularly shows some upside bias.
How is this summer tracked for energy use in the United States? And I'm talking about gasoline usage, I suppose, and what's traditionally a higher usage time frame?
Actually, you've seen the usage rates actually increase, and a lot of that coming out of the East Coast, where some of the hot temperatures have forced a lot of people to the shore and the beaches, which does consume quite a lot of gasoline as they move toward the beaches on the weekends. So the gasoline situation has actually improved, and that's not only confined to gasoline, but also some of the transportation, other transportation fuels, including jet kero and diesel, have also shown some increases as well.
You expect your outlook to continue to be good as we finish out the summer and move into the fall time frame?
Yes, I would suspect so, and it's kind of running counter to some of the things you hear in terms of the economy being as weak as it is. But you are seeing product move and transportation actually move into a somewhat high capacity range.
What's been top of your mind for the last week or so beyond the wheat market?
Well, certainly I think the demand side is still a source of concern. Chinese demand was indicated here today as having fallen in terms of import levels, but I think that's a one-off kind of situation, that the Chinese situation is going to be somewhat buoyant as we move into 2011. Another factor I think one has to certainly look at is the situation with respect to the hurricanes and tropical storms that could have an impact on some of the operations in the Gulf.
Thank you so much. That's Stephen Platt. He's with Archer Financial Services in Chicago. That's an affiliate of ADM. Stay with us. In just 2 minutes, I'll return with a look at the agricultural weather forecast here on the Closing Market Report. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
It's National S'mores Day. The marshmallow graham cracker chocolate treat dates back at least till the early 1900s, when American food companies invented Malamars and moon pies. It's also St. Lawrence of Rome Day, patron of cooks, protector of vineyards. On this day in agricultural history in 1810, William Willett was born. An English builder, he is credited with the invention of daylight savings time. Willett says he had the idea while taking an early summer morning ride near his home in London. But his idea was not adopted until after his death in World War I as a way for wartime fuel savings. In 1817, Francis Lowell died, an American manufacturer. He was the principal founder of what is said to have been the world's first textile mill, in which under one roof, raw cotton was turned into finished cloth. In 1889, Dan Rylands patented a screw cap for bottles. He was employed at the Hope Glass Works, Barnsley, Yorkshire, England. And in 1917, Clara Peller was born. She is the actress who is famous for her Wendy's TV commercial, "Where's the Beef?" And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming is with us to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Thanks for being with us, Don. Looks like it's going to be fairly warm here and really hot in Ukraine. What can you tell us?
Well, yeah. While we're looking at a very typical heading towards mid-August weather pattern, and we don't expect anything extraordinary. Yes, there's some parts of the northern hemisphere still baking in some heat. Ukraine, one of those, and Russia, although there is a little bit of good news. As you'd expect, as we start to get into the middle of this month, there's going to probably start to be a little bit of a breakdown in the permanent, what has been, the semi-permanent area of high pressure over Eastern Europe and Russia that should allow some relief, especially next week, from the extreme heat and dryness. But in the short term, we're still going to be making headlines with that dryness over there in the Ukraine and in Russia.
I did talk with somebody in Kiev this morning. They had a little rainfall yesterday, but it must have been really slight. And she called it a hot rain. In fact, we'll hear a bit more about that in a couple of minutes during the Farming World this afternoon. Do you think that they will be getting enough rainfall to actually put a wheat crop in the ground for next season?
Well, you know, that's a little difficult to say at the moment. The blocking pattern that's been responsible for the drought and the heat wave there, it takes a while for these to break down. We're seeing signs that it's going to weaken. And it's sort of like a good analogy is it's like a little bit of when a dam breaks. It holds it back, and then once it does break down, that should be able to get cooler weather and better chances for moisture to come in later this month and into early September. But the timing of this breakdown, while we start to see it develop, is a little too far out in terms of being able to talk about enough to get the wheat crop in. That's something we'll have to see.
And then, speaking of dry areas, I received a note from a listener that is north of us suggesting, hey, wait a second, you know, you're talking about all this pretty decent crop around, but he's been awfully dry in the northern part of Illinois. Are there really places that are fairly dry?
Well, there are pockets, and this is not unusual in a summer season when our bread and butter are these clusters of thunderstorms that come on through, not necessarily associated with any large-scale system. You tend to have winners and you have some losers when it comes to rainfall. So not surprised that we do have some areas throughout the Midwest where that have been drier. However, those appear to be the exception and not the rule.
Okay. Anything that we need to know about the weather here before I let you go?
Well, I expect basically more of the same. We are seeing some subtle changes in the jet stream, especially the northern jet stream that is indicating that we are heading towards that end of summer pattern where we start to see a bit more activity coming in from the northwest. But that's probably 10 days away or so. Until then, it's status quo.
All right. Thanks so much, Don, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Stay with us if you can for the Farming World. Otherwise, you can always hear it at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Rob O'Malley in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
This is the Farming World News and Information from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know we've been talking a lot about the wheat market in the closing market report over the last several months. This morning I had a conversation with Vlad Konovalchuk, who is with the Bridges Program at www.bridges.com/UA. That UA stands for Ukraine. He is in Kiev. We had a discussion about the wheat crop there and in Russia. You'll be a bit surprised, I think, about the wheat crop in Ukraine and what this U.S. agribusiness-trained economist has to say. We'll pick up the excerpts in a moment. It might be important, I suppose, Vlad, to note that you're a graduate from Penn State University here in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
All right, so your English is very, very good.
Well, thank you. I work part-time as a spy.
Well, in that case, why don't you tell me, Vlad, because some of our listeners, this is a farm program, and many of our listeners have been watching the price of wheat, especially last week as it drove sharply higher when we really gathered that the wheat crop in Ukraine and Russia, the Black Sea, was under a lot of drought stress, and then Putin closed off the exports at the request of a company called Glencore. And probably many others. And then, of course, it's dropped back. But I'm wondering, your conditions, it looks like, and I'll give you the Fahrenheits, that you're going to 160 degrees by Saturday of this week. What are conditions like, and how is the crop in Ukraine, all the crop in Ukraine, managing this heat stress?
In fact, there is a lot of attention in the media, a lot of interest in the media here in Ukraine, and we have been called by a lot of different people with this same question. So, in Ukraine, the forecast for this year is standing at about 42 million tons, maybe between 40 and 42 million tons. Plus, we have the remaining stocks. Ending stocks are estimated at about 5-6 million tons, which is pretty good amount of grain. You know, if you look at the Ukrainian grain crops over the last 10 years, you only have a bigger crop in 2008 and in 2009. Other than that, this crop is going to be pretty good in Ukraine. So it's not dramatically affected by this drought at this point. At the same time, in Russia, there is a slightly different situation. From what we see here, and based on some of the information I'm getting today, they will have a considerably lower crop. Not much lower, but they were hurt more than Ukraine.
So you're in Kyiv, and then the production areas for wheat, I suppose, are what direction from you? Are they to the... They're to the south towards the Black Sea and to the east towards
south,
Russia?
Southeast. East and southern Ukraine are the major, grain crop areas.
And then are those contiguous with the grain production areas in Russia? And so the further east you go, the worse your crop might be. Is that right?
Yeah, it's our feeling. It's just that way, yeah.
Right. And how far from... Kyiv to the Russian border?
From Kyiv to the Russian border, about 400 miles or something like that, 500 miles. Maybe.
Yeah, so it's a pretty good distance. It's like going from the lower third of Illinois to the port of New Orleans. It's a pretty good distance, and there can be a lot of change from one place to the other. Can you talk also about the difference between, you mentioned WTO and Ukraine being a member. And I did make note that Russia was able to act unilaterally, but Ukraine would be under different conditions if they were to try to. They simply aren't supposed to, but they could possibly, I suppose, try to limit exports of wheat.
Yes, that's correct. Ukraine is a member of WTO, so it's much more difficult for Ukraine to impose export restrictions, while Russia is not a WTO member, so they could just introduce a quota, a ban, an export ban, and so it's much easier for Russia. However, you know, here in Ukraine, they have been playing a different type of game, so government was trying to restrict exports for some strange reason, but not through official bans or anything like that, but just simply through creating all kinds of obstacles at the customs, at the train, at the ports, through the railway system, those kind of things, which is really, really bad. That's a really terrible policy as far as I'm concerned.
So the government's capable of doing it, and it appears from your point of view that they have moved to at least stop some shipments in custom or hold them up in some form already?
Yes. It's not as bad as in Russia, but there are cases when traders are complaining about it. Some traders are okay, some traders are not. It depends on particular case.
From your broad perspective, your suggestion is that Ukraine, given its ending stocks and the current crop, look fine, second largest grain crop on hand. Is the Russian crop, is that a really local, more regional problem? And do you think it will cause or should have caused so much of a problem in the world marketplace?
Well, you know, if you look at the CBOT, Chicago Board of Trade futures prices, you know, you probably looked at them. They are pretty high, you know, and over the last months, they increased quite a bit. I think that part of that is because of the Russian situation. So will Russia have an effect? I think they will. And I think a lot of people were paranoid by these export bans and bad crops in Russia. So my feeling is that those futures increased partially due to that, maybe partially due to other things. But yes, I think Russia will have an effect on the world market prices. But well, let's see. Maybe if they will, you know, they may change their mind and cancel those export restrictions in 1 month, and then the situation will be different.
I almost hate to ask this question, but when I first saw that Glencore, and that was reported by Reuters, I believe, had asked Putin to close exports, I wondered how it was that a company or why it was that a company might be interested in doing that. And I'm just cynical enough to think that they might have had their own financial reason to do that. Although I suppose they only asked it to be closed for 4 to 6 weeks, which would be roughly enough time for them to get out of a marketplace or to mm-hmm. enforce a force majeure. Mm-hmm. And this is a company that's pretty big. They operate in the Black Sea. They operate in Australia for wheat. They operate in South America, Argentina in particular. A company named Merino, I think, is their company there. Is it possible to think that the companies are working together with governments to try to make sure that they manage their way through a financial problem?
Yes, it was very surprising to learn that. And while you would think that, you know, why would trading companies be together with the government on these export restrictions, that's kind of surprising. But, well, under specific circumstances, when you have a ban but you don't have an official ban, you cannot claim a force majeure circumstances on your contracts. But if there is an official ban, then you are in a slightly better situation as a trader. You could claim a force majeure and then you will not pay the penalties associated with not fulfilling the agreement. So maybe Glencore was in such a situation so that the exports were banned for a little while, but not officially banned. So they have asked the government, if you're going to ban, then you have to officially ban it so that we could claim the force majeure circumstances.
Right.
So maybe that was the case. That's actually the only case that I can think of. Otherwise, I just don't. It doesn't seem to me logical for traders to ask for those restrictions, because traders are going to lose because of the export bans.
Right, right. Well, it's something, I guess I'm cynical enough that I thought about it. Who knows one way or the other what it really means. I don't know. So let's come back to privatization of property in Ukraine.
Yeah, there's something else I should add before we go to this.
Okay.
I just want to say that these high world grain prices are very good news for Ukraine and for Ukrainian agriculture, I think. If government will not intervene, and a lot of experts are actually telling them that they should not intervene, Ukrainian agriculture is going to win a big time, you know, because a lot of producers will make a lot of money on these higher prices, because they have quite a bit of grain here. So my feeling is that it's really good news for the Ukrainian agricultural producers.
When I traveled in Ukraine, within about an 80, and I'm going to say about an 80-kilometer radius, I believe it was, of Kyiv, agriculture really looked very much like agriculture in the United States. It was harvest time. There were large combines, combines that U.S. producers would be using, combines that farmers in South America might be using. But the further we got out, the more likely it was that we saw very, very old machinery. By the time I got to Poltava, which I think is about 300 miles, maybe, from Kyiv, it was an entirely different story. Has that radius, and I'll call it the westernized radius, from Kyiv gotten much larger than that 80-kilometer area in the last 7 or 8 years?
Well, maybe, but at the same time, you would see that there are islands of success, if you will. You would see pretty powerful ag companies or large farmers that have the latest technologies, the latest equipment, and pretty good crops all over Ukraine, actually, you know, in the eastern part and in the western part and central part. But these are only the islands of success, and there are a lot of farms that that are pretty bad. So it's not just, you know, it's not that simple that, you know, it's either around Kyiv or not, right now, at least.
Right.
But it's a slightly different situation right now, is that you have these islands of success, but at the same time, there are a lot of poor farms that have outdated technology, outdated equipment and machinery, and their knowledge is very limited.
Are the islands of success filled with individuals as owners of the farms, or are they mostly, and I'll call them corporate farms, but corporate names that we might recognize in the world, so the Louis Dreyfuses of the world and such organizations?
Well, there are some. For example, we have recently worked with Nibelon. I'm not sure if you heard about them, but we have recently worked with Nibelon, which is a big grower and big exporter of grain from Ukraine. We brought a group of Nibelon staff and regional directors over to the Washington State, and people in Washington State knew pretty much all about Nibelon. You know, they knew about them before they came. The people that hosted them there. So companies like that, yes, they're not as big as some large international players, but they're emerging, I think.
That's Vlad Konovalchuk of the Bridges Program in Ukraine at www.bridges.com.ua. When we return, we'll take up more of the wheat market with Daryl Good. You're listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media.
This is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. In business news, meat producer Tyson Foods posted an 89% jump in third quarter net income as its chicken business continued to recover, and it benefited from higher beef and pork prices. A smaller cattle herd this year reduced U.S. beef production and led to higher prices, with Tyson's up 19.5% for the quarter. Profit in the pork segment jumped to $125 million from $28 million a year earlier, helped by a 31.6% increase in prices and operating efficiencies, which offset higher hog procurement costs. Overall, earnings rose to $248 million, or 65 cents per share in the third quarter, from $131 million, or 35 cents a share a year earlier. A group of U.S. senators urged the Department of Justice yesterday to complete an antitrust investigation into Monsanto Company over its patents for genetically modified seeds. The lawmakers wrote in a letter sent to Assistant Attorney General Christine Varney, quote, "We believe it is vital to preserve competition in seed markets and in the agricultural industry at large. It is our belief that swift resolution of this particular matter will best serve this important interest." A Justice Department spokeswoman said that its antitrust division is investigating the possibility of anti-competitive practices in the seed industry, but would not confirm that it is focusing on any specific companies. And that's a look at today's business news.
You're listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. In the second part of our program today, we'll continue the conversation on wheat and global stocks. Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I, is with us. He's been crunching some of the numbers. What do the stats tell you, Dr. Good?
Well, two things, Todd. I mean, from a general standpoint, we're starting the current marketing year, if you will, with fairly large world inventories of wheat, both inside the U.S. and outside. We're at a multiple year high on inventories. So the focus right now, of course, is on the concern about this year's crop, with various weather factors around the world pointing to a much smaller world wheat crop than we've had the last 2 years, which were nearly record large. Canada, a lot less acreage planted because of spring conditions. And now the focus is on really the Black Sea area because of drought conditions that have persisted since spring there, continually lowering production estimates for Russia, Kazakhstan, and to some extent the Ukraine. And then last week's announcement that Russia said they would suspend wheat exports at least until the end of the year. So that's the broad picture. What does it all mean? On a worldwide basis, we do feed a lot of wheat on an annual basis. Somewhere around 4 billion bushels of wheat a year get fed outside of the United States. Much of that is in Europe and Russia. So there is some concern that there will be less wheat available for feeding this year. Although with a big stock level, there should be adequate supplies. The bigger issue is the run-up in wheat prices. Will that just shift some demand away from high-priced wheat to what is now lower-priced corn in livestock rations around the world, and therefore boost the consumption of corn, and then in the scope of things, increase the price of corn? And that's a reason I think we've seen corn prices following wheat prices up, is maybe expecting some shift in demand from wheat to corn in livestock rations. That would also come at a time that we might see some stronger imports from China as well. That's yet to be determined, but a lot of talk about more corn demand in China to fuel their livestock industry. So it's really a developing situation, a dynamic situation. Nobody really knows yet the final outcome of this year's crops and if and when Russia will get back into the export business. So it's very fluid. Prices have rocketed sharply higher on wheat, and then late last week settled back down. Clearly, I think there was some overreaction, and also the recognition that if these kind of prices are maintained for a few more weeks, that the Northern Hemisphere is likely to respond with a lot more winter wheat acres in 2010 to be harvested in 2011, so that there would be the prospect that we could go from a bit of a shortage of wheat to a surplus of wheat in a very short period of time. So that resulted in different price behavior in old crop versus new crop wheat. And I think initially we did see the weakness come back into the new crop because of the recognition that we could expand production. So really kind of a unique situation, a fast-developing situation, and the market reacted in a very, very strong way.
What would give you confirmation that the price of corn is really being impacted and it's substituting in some way for feed wheat in on the global marketplace?
Well, we would need to see some evidence really in our export sales. We would like to see those numbers continue to be larger for new crop. We would look at where the destination is for those. Are those going to areas that traditionally import wheat for feeding, or and just would then be verified that we are seeing the expectation translated into actual purchases of U.S. corn. There's enough lag in those numbers that we haven't really seen that yet, but that would certainly be confirmation if we saw those countries stepping up and buying a lot of U.S. corn.
Current price levels advantageous, you think, for producers to market new crop corn?
I think that depends a lot in terms of your expectation about yield of the 2010 crop. If those folks who think and expect to see a record yield of corn this year at 166 to 167 bushels, as some are saying, current prices are very attractive, I think, for some new crop sales. If you're more skeptical of those numbers and think that yield could come in maybe closer to 160 bushels, then I think now would be too early to sell corn. Our modeling would suggest that we'll be closer to 160, if not lower, on this year's yield. And if those models are in the ballpark, would say that we need to wait and see the August report before we get much more aggressive on new crop corn sales.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That was University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good talking about the wheat market and global grain stocks. USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, is set to release the latest world agricultural supply and demand estimates on Thursday morning of this week. If you'd like to stay up with those numbers, you can always tune in to us at willag.org, willag.org. We'll stream the numbers out live around 8:50 a.m., but they come out 7:30 a.m. Central Time on Thursday morning of this week. You can pick those up just as quickly, around 7:40 from us, in an email. Just sign up for our weekend newsletter at willag.org. If you give us your cell phone number, we'll send you the stats via text message. It's all at willag.org. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been The Farming World.